The Battle for Liberty, Episode 3.
This is the Battle for Liberty.
Thanks for joining me for another episode of the Battle for Liberty. I'm your host, Mike Tilden. Welcome to the podcast dedicated to the journey of the libertarian novice. You can think of this as the libertarian show for the regular Joe, or your training wheels for the liberty movement, or the unconventional university. As always, check us out at battleforliberty.com. You can follow us on Twitter at @mybattleliberty. Or you can email me if you like at mike@battleforliberty.com. Remember, you can subscribe to this show on both iTunes and Stitcher. That really helps me out. That's the best way for you to get it delivered to your device every single time there's a new episode. And it helps me show that I'm growing a listener base. So if you're looking for a way to help me out, that's the way that you can start. And I'll do you one better. If you really want to help out, tell a friend. Tell someone about the show and tell them how they can listen and how they can sign up to subscribe as well. As always, the show notes page for this episode will be battleforliberty.com/3. So there's no need for you to try to remember article names, author names, or any other reference that I talk about on the episode. You just go right on over to battleforliberty.com/3, and everything will be right there, easy and convenient, no fuss whatsoever. All right. Well, I am recording this episode from the beautiful People's Republic of California, Santa Barbara to be exact. And this really is the only place on Earth that I've ever known to have quite so many Toyota Priuses per capita as Boulder, Colorado. You know, there's also quite a few Chevy Volts and other purely electric vehicles running around this city. And, you know, I've always really wanted to go up to an owner of an electric vehicle and ask them where they think the electricity comes from that powers the battery in their car. It's probably fossil fuels or maybe even nuclear. So you're really just driving around a fossil fuel or nuclear car. But I really don't want to be in the middle of a hissy fit from a social justice warrior. So I just let them drive around in their ignorance and feel good about themselves. And you know, that's what I do for society. I'm really a nice guy when you think about it. I really didn't think I was going to be able to record an episode this week due to my busy travel schedule, but here I am in the hotel room recording an episode because I care that much about your education. No, actually, I really just didn't want my first week without an episode to be week number 3, so I decided to hunker down and do the work and get it out there for you. So, this episode is going to be a little bit short compared to the first two episodes, and that is not going to be a trend. I just didn't have enough time to put together a longer episode due to all of the work activities that I have this week. When I'm done recording tonight, I actually have to hurry up and pack everything up out of the hotel room and try to get a couple hours sleep before I get up, before the sun is up, to take my 3 flights all the way to Florida tomorrow. So, we are going to dive right in to the Libertarian Life segment. And the Libertarian Life segment this week focuses on Pokemon Go. Yes, believe it or not, we are going to talk about the latest gaming craze, Pokemon Go. And if you don't know what it is, just do a quick Google search. It's a new interactive app for your smartphone that combines a very long-running video game called Pokemon with the GPS technology of your phone to pit users against each other in an effort to walk around everywhere you can imagine and collect different Pokemon, which are characters in the game. And then once they get enough of these characters, or the right kind, or the smartest, or the strongest, they can then participate in a fictitious battle in order to fight teams against each other. So that's really the extent of what I know of Pokemon. Now, growing up, I really didn't understand what Pokemon was. I had no idea how it worked or why it was popular, to be honest. I knew it was a cartoon and a game, but I really never knew more than that when I was younger. To me, it just looked like a poorly made cartoon. So when this new craze caught on, I didn't take the proper time to think about it and put it into context, but rather I scoffed at it. And had a pretty arrogant attitude. Maybe I was having a bad day at work, I don't know, but my attitude was basically, who are these people who have time to play such frivolous games? I thought it was a waste of time, and I thought, why aren't they doing something productive, like reading or studying history or economics or educating themselves in some way, right? So I thought I knew better what they should be doing with their life. And I even remember having a debate with my wife about this, and I tried to make the argument that, you know, well, this is why we're in the state that we're in, right? This is the dismal state of affairs that we're in politically and socially, is because people don't try to better themselves, rather they sit around and play Pokemon. Well, like I said, I hadn't taken the time to really think about the context of the free decisions of other people. And, you know, this is a great example of what I talked about in that first episode when I referenced the internal battle for liberty. Of course, we know that anyone who yearns for freedom and truly understands how we arrive at a truly free state will constantly be fighting an external battle with those that seek to centralize power and take control. But I identified in episode number one, so this is a central theme of this show, it's not just the external battle for liberty, but it's also the internal battle for liberty. And this is one aspect of the battle that I speak about and write about on my site. It's not just that water cooler debate that you're going to have at work. It's not just the awkward Thanksgiving, Christmas argument that you'll have with your family. It's really also about you, and it's about me, and it's about how we as human beings have a tendency to react in a way that encourages taking control over others. Now, it could be that this is simply a part of human nature. I'm not a philosopher, so I don't pretend to know what human nature is. But I do know that it can sometimes be in my nature. It can be my knee-jerk reaction. And that's the internal battle, is fighting that knee-jerk reaction. I don't know where that knee-jerk reaction comes from. It could be that it was inculcated in me as a young student in public school, and maybe that had something to do with it, or maybe it would have been there no matter where I would have been schooled. But nonetheless, that instinct does tend to be there. And I notice it constantly. And I do believe that many people are struggling with that knee-jerk reaction. But to stay true to the theme of the show, I won't make that assumption that that's true of you. I will let you make an analysis. I hope that you do make an analysis and come to a conclusion as to whether or not this is something you suffer from. So over the next few days, after I had that debate with my wife, I was able to think about this in greater depth. And by the way, as an aside, I think you guys will come to see over time, if you listen to the show regularly, that this becomes a common theme as well, that when my wife and I have debates, it's pretty common for me to take a couple days and think about it and come back and think, you know what? She was right. She's pretty good that way. Her gut reaction tends to be right in line with the libertarian line of thinking. She just has an instinct for leaving people alone and letting people be themselves. And so that's something about her that I admire greatly. So As I thought about this over a couple of days, I came to this question that's central to how I think we should try to analyze the world. And it's this question. As long as my life, liberty, and property are not being infringed upon, then why is it any concern of mine how another human being gleans enjoyment from this life? And there it is. I couldn't believe it when it came to me, but sure enough, even a game like Pokemon Go is holding a piece of the Liberty puzzle. And in fact, when you dive deeper, you find that there's actually a few pieces of the Liberty puzzle hidden beneath a mundane topic like a video game. So we've already talked about the first aspect, and that was, again, to review, was actually, it turned out to be the very essence of the non-aggression principle, right beneath the surface. So long as no one is being harmed and property is not violated, live and let live. To each his own. Do not aggress upon someone. Do not try to force your views onto them. And this holds true in my mind, both physically and in a way that we judge people. I had judged people as being, or I should say rather, using their time unwisely. Well, how is it any concern of mine? Who am I to judge what is a wise or just use of someone's time? So that was the first theme that was hiding right underneath the surface here. The second is one that I'm going to take a little bit longer to explain, and I'm going to develop here over the course of the next couple of minutes. And that is the time-honored battle of the free market versus bureaucratic central control. And since we're talking about Pokemon, which is a fictitious battle between characters, I thought that I would refer to this battle of the free market versus bureaucratic control as Freakachu versus Bureaupuff. And so if you know anything about Pokemon, that may be funny to you. Otherwise, maybe look up Pokemon, you'll maybe get it. But I want to take a look specifically at a government endeavor that's been going on for almost 7 years now, and it's Michelle Obama's Let's Move initiative. So for the last 7 years, Mrs. Obama and the federal government have been illegally spending roughly $4.5 billion of your dollars in tax money in an attempt to reduce childhood obesity and increase the amount of exercise that children are partaking in on an average basis. They want to increase every child's exercise regimen to roughly 60 minutes a day. That's the goal. Reduce childhood obesity and increase exercise. Okay, so on the surface, you think to yourself, okay, how could that be a bad thing, right? And of course, it's not a bad thing, but it does become a bad thing when the state takes control over it. And here's why. Despite all of that money that's been spent, the Let's Move campaign has been a total failure. Now, of course, we're not shocked about this, but you may not hear about its total and utter failure. So let's take a look at how it's failed. First of all, obesity is not declining thanks to this program. It simply isn't. And furthermore, our young ones aren't exercising more either. Now, when you do the research and you look up all the statistics, what you'll find is that there are some studies that show childhood obesity in certain age groups is climbing rapidly. And then there's other studies that show that childhood obesity generally is declining modestly. And so, of course, this just confirms for us that you can really find statistics to back up anything you want, right? But to me, what it says is that rather than us trying to draw the conclusion that Let's Move is causing more obesity, what we can say with a pretty good amount of certainty is that the Let's Move initiative is not achieving its stated goals. That much we do know. Now, of course, what you won't hear from anyone in the government, or really in the media for that matter, is that for the age groups where you did see a modest decline in the obesity rate, that downward trend was already present prior to the Let's Move campaign's initiation. And this is a common theme of how the government portrays its statistics that make its programs look good. You will see this over and over again, and we will highlight it each time on this show. But that theme is that the government will create a program to fix some sort of problem, and then they will find statistics that support that their program is working. But what they won't do is, if you will, zoom out to show the macro understanding of the trend lines. So in this case, the trend was for childhood obesity in those particular age groups to be declining prior to the Let's Move program beginning. And if you understand that context, you understand that it's entirely possible that the Let's Move campaign has had absolutely no effect whatsoever. But that won't stop the government from trying to convince you that this correlation between a downward trend and the money being spent on the program, that correlation is somehow a causal association. And of course, we should know that correlation is not causation. So we'll try to point this out whenever we see it, but again, we see it here with the Let's Move campaign statistics that are present on the Let's Move website. And there's an article by Alec Torres over at National Review that summarizes this phenomenon very well. Now, this article is back from 2014, but it's applicable nonetheless. In that article, he says, quote, "Despite $4.5 billion in funding for the Let's Move campaign and USDA hyper-regulations and multiple executive actions created to influence personal habits, the government has little to show for its efforts. The declining obesity rates that the president cites began years before Michelle Obama had any say, and there's no indication that Let's Move has greatly helped the process." Well, score one for Freakachu, at least as far as I'm concerned. Okay, so at this point, I think we've pretty clearly shown that the Let's Move campaign has not been effective, and it has wasted lots and lots of taxpayer money. So the next question we have to ask ourselves is, what lesson can we learn? And Larry O'Connor does a good job of talking about maybe what we can glean from the comparison between the failure of Let's Move and, say, the success of something like Pokemon Go. And he writes, quote, "Apparently the only tangible accomplishment of the First Lady's program was to get kids to reject food that looked and tasted like cardboard. If those kids were making their own lunches at home, they might have actually learned something more important than nutrition. They might have learned to reject the notion that their food is to be delivered by a government bureaucrat. So if making viral videos dancing with Jimmy Fallon isn't going to get kids off the sofa and exercising, what will? We learned the answer to that question this weekend. The answer is capitalism." End quote. And so what is he talking about? What does he mean? Well, clearly I think he's getting at a pretty fundamental point here, and that is that the free market always has a better, cheaper, and more efficient alternative to fix the problems that are ailing us. This is yet another example of how the government has failed to fix a problem. All they've done is thrown money at it. And how the free market very quickly and very easily figures out a way to fix this problem for us. And they do it in such a way that is mutually beneficial to, say, shareholders of a video game company, and to consumers who get enjoyment and exercise out of something that didn't cost them very much, and, oh by the way, is completely voluntary. So here we have a respect for both property rights and for non-aggression. No one has been coerced, and people have voluntarily transacted, exchanging money and or time for something that benefits them. It's a fantastic lesson. So, as far as I'm concerned, that's score number two for Freakachu. So finally, the last battle, shall we say, in the war of Freakachu versus Bureaupuff, is going to be highlighted for us in another article, this time by Jeffrey Tucker, and this is from the Foundation for Economic Education. And he recently wrote an article which chronicles our love affair with Pokemon Go, and it's called How Pokemon Go Brightened a Dark World. Now, this article is a little bit different. It makes a lot of great points. It starts out by talking about how this new game has distracted us from the recent tragedies and tensions that are plaguing our society. So those tensions include things like an alarming presidential election, to police conflicts and racial tensions. And all of these things are depressing us and forcing us to think about things that aren't really all that fun to think about. And this app has brought us all together in a way that is enjoyable to everyone and lets us forget about the negative and focus on what's positive and what we all have in common, and that's just pure enjoyment. And I think it's important that we don't ignore that all of the maladies described by Tucker in this article are problems of the government's making or associated very close to the government's making. I encourage you to go to the show notes page and click on the link and read the whole article. It's a fantastic argument and really a great point. But it's this closing portion of the article that really knocks it out of the park. And so let me read from it for you. Quote, "Mobile apps like Pokemon Go can, of course, be dismissed as just another game. Distractions that do not address serious life problems like race conflict and the tit-for-tat killings between police and citizens. But actually, there's more going on here. A few weeks ago, Facebook rolled out its live video functionality for all users, and keep in mind that this is free for everyone on the planet to use. When a police officer shot Philando Castile with 4 bullets during a routine traffic stop, his girlfriend, Diamond Reynolds, took out her phone and live-streamed one of the most dramatic and powerful moments yet seen on the subject of police power. It shocked the consciences of millions. Facebook was her 911. Had private enterprise not been there, the world would not have known. Now that we do, change is made more likely. That's the serious side of technology, while Pokemon Go represents the delightful side. They work together, each making a valuable contribution to enabling a better life. What they have in common is that both are non-state solutions to crying human needs. No politician in history has ever achieved so much for the cause of human rights and human happiness." Boy, if that's not a mic drop moment, I don't know what is. Okay, so I think that's pretty clear. We're now at 3 on the side of Freakachu to nothing on the side of Bureaupuff. I think this is completely smashed. I think we have shown, once again, that the free market triumphs over bureaucratic central control. And that is the Libertarian Life segment for this week. And actually, that's going to do it for this episode. Like I said earlier in the show, I just don't have time to get deeper into any of the current events from this week. I know there's a lot going on with the Republican National Convention, the nomination of Donald Trump, and the selection of Governor Pence as the VP for the Republican Party. There's a lot to say about that, but I just don't have time to put it together nicely in a relatable way, so we're going to have to defer until next week. So, until that time, please remember to subscribe to the show on iTunes or Stitcher, and if you can do me a favor, please refer the show to a friend. It's really going to help me out. And come on back and listen next week, and if you guys can do that, I'll be here boiling down everyday topics, everyday situations, and pointing out the libertarian themes for you to learn. So thanks so much for listening, and until next time, battle on.